You're listening to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide with Bart Zandbergen, your distinguished host and certified financial planner.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, showcasing wealth strategies, investment wisdom for the essentials for the revolving world. I'm Letitia Burbaum, and I'm your guest host today. Thank you, Paul, our engineer here in the studio.
We're going to let you fly solo today here, Letitia. I don't know if we're ready for it. I don't know if Bart's ever going to get the show back again here.
Oh, I know. It'll be so much fun. Thank you. Appreciate it. So it's such an honor for me to introduce our special guest today. So please share your name with us.
Mark Van Murek.
Mark is a founding partner at Optivest Wealth Management. And first, before he shares with us today, I'd like to share a little bit about Mark. He's been in business for about four decades now, and he has brought in a tremendous amount of experience. He was the youngest senior vice president and partner at Smith Barney just to start his amazing career before he established Optivest Wealth Management in 1987, where he then helped manage some of the nation's wealthiest families. In addition to his wealth management talent, he has a tremendous amount of expertise in business and real estate. Also, as the co-founder of a national REIT that he's helped take public, and also an author of the book Cash In, or Cash Out, Cash In, After the Success of Investment Guide. So enough of what I'd like to say about the bio. I just really wanted to introduce Mark here and have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
You asked me to tell my backstory.
Yes,
and
please.
So maybe we'll start a little there, and it'll relate to some of the things that we're talking about today. Mine's not a typical rags-to-riches story. I unfortunately inherited some money early. Unfortunately, because it took somebody to pass for that to happen.
Sorry.
Yeah. Actually, it's the only tragic part of the story, but I was 12, my sister was 9, and my folks were killed in an airplane crash.
Wow.
So a couple of things came out of that. One is that my parents had actually had the foresight to do some advanced planning and estate planning, and this is back in the mid-60s, and it wasn't done much, but it really laid the foundation for the care of my sister and I.
Smart.
Not just financially, but they'd also named some families that we were to go live with. I ended up with my Scoutmaster's family through high school, and then I was on my own after that. But I did inherit a couple hundred thousand dollars. I didn't get my hands on it until I was 18.
Yeah.
But I knew it was coming. And my father at the time, the stepfather, Hayden, was kind of a Quaker, meaning that he was very conservative. He would always say, I have my clothes, I have brown and black shoes, that sort of thing.
Mm.
But he instilled in me that capital was never to be touched. And if you eat anything, it's the fruit off the tree, but never spend the capital.
Wise words.
Yeah. And so there's other Quaker-like values that he taught me through there. And I think I was well prepared by the time I started. Mm. I did start my career in finance, thinking about this, thinking that I was going to want to manage my own money.
Mm.
And that's kind of full circle. I'll jump to today, and I'm the largest account at the firm. So
yeah.
Things have gone pretty well. But it was the book of learning, if you will. It's like the checkbook.
Yeah.
So I've learned alongside my clients, but also we had some great mentors along the years of some very wealthy families that I was able to adopt their practices.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing some of the backstory. It definitely makes you much more of a real person, especially for me, the next generation. I'm trying to figure out, what's that legacy? What does that look like going forward? And I really appreciate you sharing today. So that's great. In your book, you talk about, how much is enough. And I know we kind of briefly mentioned that a little bit, but can you share some of your thoughts on, when wealth becomes more than just for you, and now you're thinking about for your heirs, for your legacies, and for your charities, what does that look like?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think a lot of people have a number in their head that they think is enough, and over the years, usually that number just goes up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, it really is enough. And let me tell you a quick story, and then I'll tell you a formula that we've developed to help get your arms around that.
That'd be great.
My stepfather died, probably 15 years ago now.
Okay.
And I was working with my mom, cleaning things up, and I said, let me help you with your finances. She said, we always had enough. We always have enough. So I said, okay, well, you know, what do you have to work with? And they lived in Laguna Woods.
Okay.
I was going to say Leisure World.
Same thing.
Yeah. But it turned out she had $75,000 at Schwab. Okay. And I was just aghast. I said, how can you live off this? She goes, you know what? The pension, the Social Security, the only time we ever dipped into those funds was for trips, and I'm not taking many trips, and I'll never spend that money. And she didn't.
Wow.
So with that small amount, that was enough. So that same week, I was going heli-skiing, as I do, and I was going up with a friend, and he's lives in a large house in Nellagale. And, you know, you talk about avalanches and a little risk, and he...
Little risk.
Yeah, so he was saying, you know, if I don't make it back, if I die, you know, my wife's going to have about $10 million. Do you think she can make it?
Mm.
And I know what he's thinking. Could she live in that big house and could the kids go to the college and everything? But still, twice in that week, one of them, you know, was $75,000, thinking that was more than enough.
Right.
And somebody was scared at $10
million. Right.
So it's definitely a relative question. But there is a formula for that,
okay.
And that is, and I give this formula for two things. One, that you have something to aim for as you're accumulating wealth, and knowing when you can retire. And also, if you get above this formula, then you probably won't spend it. And so then you can kind of have a good idea what is enough for you, and then you can either pass on to your kids or charities. Well, the formula in today's low interest rate environment is 3-to-1. And that is that if you have a paid-for house that reflects your lifestyle,
okay,
and three times that amount in income-producing assets, that's enough.
Okay.
And I've seen it work up and down the scale. I've seen people with $200,000 homes with $600,000 in the bank, if you will, being able to retire on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a friend... down south in San Diego, $36 million of homes, and he's got well over $100 million, and it seems to work for him too.
Right.
But it's a good formula, and it's a good target. So if somebody, just easy examples in between, if somebody thinks they're going to end up with a $2 million home paid for, so that's a challenge in itself to get your mortgage amortized to pay for it when you retire.
Yeah.
But you would shoot for trying to have maybe $6 million in investments that are cash flowing. You could do it on 2x. The problem with 2x is that it's just nip and tuck, puts a lot of pressure on your stock portfolio to have a 5% after-tax return in today's dollars. But if you have a 3-to-1, that would mean you'd only have to pull out 3.3% of your money every year. You could do that, and your portfolio should continue to grow to keep up with inflation. So that's the number.
Yeah.
And if people find themselves behind that curve, they can always sell a house and right size and such as they get to retirement.
Right.
But if people find themselves over that amount, and we've got several people that they're still kind of scared sometimes, not knowing if they have enough, but they live modestly and have quite a bit saved up, and we do this formula and can really safely encourage them that they have enough so that they can be charitable or they can start handing money on to the next generation.
That's great. So if I were in this situation that I'm preparing for retirement and you're having this conversation with me, how do most people take this formula, this theory?
Depends how old they are.
Yeah.
I'm actually meeting with a group of my son's friends. They formed an investment club. They're in their mid-30s. And they haven't moved up yet in houses, and they're in a good. They've got a lot of runway yet to invest.
Yep.
And that works pretty good. I met a man a few years ago who also lived in Nellagale. Doctor made about $400,000 a year. Came in and said he wanted to retire in 5 years. So we said, okay, let's see what you got.
Yeah.
He had about $75,000 in his IRA and about $200,000 of equity in his big home, and that was all. He kept refinancing. He hadn't saved much, and he wanted to retire in 5 years.
Yeah.
This is what I told him. I said, you're going to sell the big house. Yeah. You're going to move into a teeny condo. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay the teeny condo off, and you're going to save half your money that you make in the next 5 years, and you're going to live a very modest life after you retire.
Yeah.
So do you think he did it?
No.
No. All right.
It was a lifestyle change he had to forego.
That's right. And so he will probably die at his desk, and it'll be his spouse's problem.
Yeah.
So if you have enough runway, I encourage you to think about this. Maybe not do the last bump up in house or lifestyle,
right?
And pay the house off and sock some money away.
Yeah. So, what advice would you have for the next generation that might not have that nest egg established, but it's wanting to prepare for their future with the same strategy?
Sure. the only way to really do it is, it's just an age-old strategy of spend less than you make,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so true.
So you have to have some sort of a wedge between your after-tax earnings and your expenses. Mm-hmm. And the idea is if you can invest some of that in cash-flowing investments, that'll help reduce your overhead every month. If you can pay down debt, that also gives you a wedge to be charitable along the way. But it snowballs because as you pay debt down, your overhead's less, mm-hmm. and that wedge gets bigger, so you can continually save more.
Yes.
And if you haven't gotten way out over your skis, you can probably every time you get a raise, just increase your lifestyle a little bit.
Okay.
And that leaves you that margin.
Yeah, that's great. That's great recommendations. Now, hopefully everyone's taking your advice. They would definitely be set. I think that's fantastic. So I know that you are very passionate about legacy planning. So what are some of the suggestions that you have for families who want to pass on their wealth but don't really think that their heirs are ready for that?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I'm a living example of that you can get money early and not blow it.
Yeah.
I haven't actually seen, I know there must be some ugly trust babies out there, mm-hmm. but I haven't seen them. I've got some great examples of some clients that have done a good job teaching their children over the years, sort of like my father started with me, my stepfather.
Yeah.
I visualize wealth in a family like an orchard. Mm-hmm. And if you, if you're going to pass that down to your children, that orchard, you better teach them how to farm.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that over age-appropriate levels to start talking about the farm, start talking about farming techniques, maybe give them a little corner of the farm to work with.
Yeah.
And they should be prepared, I would think, prepared for just about anything by their mid-30s, ideally.
Yeah. So let's pretend the farm in Orange County here, say my family's in real estate, and uh-huh. we have real estate properties. Well, what advice would you have for my children? If I had the real estate properties.
Sure, that's a great example here in town. Most of the money, I think, was made in real estate in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen this in a number of local families that we work with. They start getting bringing the kids along to site visits early mm-hmm. on, seeing what dad does. It's mm-hmm. pretty physical, so you can see it well. Go around and collect rents.
Yeah.
Go to some banking meetings. Go mm-hmm. to applying for loans, this sort of thing. And seeing how the management and the property upkeep goes.
So really getting them involved in the beginning.
I would say that really early, under 10, just so they kind of have an idea. I would think in their early 20s that they could, if they didn't want to work in the business, at least they could have some little piece of visualizing the management, maybe a summer job, going collecting. And eventually it would be nice if they had an apartment building to manage or a commercial building, some involvement so that they actually understood the comings and goings of tenants and what it takes to advertise for them and the cash flow and everything.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense because you're getting them involved in the beginning, so it's not just overnight, here's your money, here off you go. It's really, it's a nice smooth transition.
Yeah. Back to the metaphor of the orchard. I mean, they could inherit it without any planning mm-hmm. and they could have a big party and burn the place down.
Yeah.
They could just ignore it mm-hmm. and the orchard would just wither and die over time. Or they could be properly trained and decide they wanted different kinds of fruit in the orchard or buy the lot next door and expand. So it really is. I think that the best visual I have is there's a Mexican family that we work with, very very wealthy, and they're sixth generation.
Okay.
And when I asked him whose money is it, mm-hmm. he gave me a look like you're asking an Indian who owns the land.
Oh, interesting.
It's not, I'm just a steward. I'm just passing through. It's my opportunity to manage the money for the family, but it's for the next generation. There isn't really a current owner. It's just our preservation of the wealth as we move along.
That's fantastic. Well, I think we have a break coming up here, and we will continue in just a moment.
Thank you.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest. Higher.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge, with the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days, all with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, back to this fascinating discussion here. I have to say, as somebody who's in his 60s and who thinks many times, I'm going to be part of the longest lived generation in history. How much is enough? And that, I appreciate that. It's the first time anybody's even given me a benchmark or a ballpark. So I appreciate that. And I like that idea. Now, you're saying three times what you already have in your house. If you have your house paid off, then triple that. Is that what you're saying?
Yep. It's a high hurdle, but you can adjust it if you want to downsize or move to another state.
Got it. Okay. All right. Fascinating stuff here. All right. Look forward to the second half of this discussion.
Yeah, already some great tips and takeaways. So thank you so much, Mark, already. I want to continue with regards to preparing heirs. Now, do you have some type of tips or checklist for families that are kind of preparing for this?
Sure, you know I do. We do have a checklist of 10 things. You can quickly go through the checklist and determine sort of a grade, if you will, for how prepared you are and your family is for inheritance.
Okay.
You can pick that up either by emailing me or Bart, mark@optivestinc.com or bart@optivestinc.com.
And they can also go to the website?
Sure, that's optivestinc.com. And in fact, we'll probably post that maybe in a blog so they can easily get that.
Well, that would be great. Yeah, I appreciate that. It's always important to be able to have tips and takeaways that you feel like you can just use to advance your family or just get a little more information and make sure you're really ready. Yeah, that's great. So what are some of your thoughts on charitable giving strategies?
Charitable giving, some people look at it as a tax motivation.
Okay.
And we've sat down with a lot of people, and at the end of the day, if they're not really passionate about something, it's not going to work because they, no matter how good the tax savings is, your kids are still going to get less if you give to charity. So it has to be something that you really want to do and have to be something that's on your heart. We have a foundation ourselves, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But a lot of people I run into, they think it's something that they're going to do when or if or when I sell or when I get rich or down the road when I retire.
Okay.
It's always around the corner. They've got good intentions, and then I ask them, you know, what their passion for, what they want to give to, and they go, well, I don't know yet. I haven't explored that. So I would just encourage people to not wait.
Yeah,
and to really think about things, injustices in the world they'd like to cure or help with, something that they're passionate about, and just start, do some exploring. You're going to stub your toe a few times, but it is definitely worth it to be able to find something that you really enjoy helping.
Yeah, if you're absolutely passionate about it, just it's really easy to spend a lot of time and being able to give freely. I believe in that, absolutely. So speaking of passionate about giving, OptiVest Wealth Management also has a foundation, and you are the president of the foundation. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. It started as a family foundation in the 90s.
Okay.
As I said, I've done very well in my career and was able to save and eat my own cooking and do well. And we did have excess early. I also have religious beliefs that I should tithe. And so we started off our foundation started off just tithing off our income, or 10% of our personal income.
Yeah.
And in 2007, we switched it to 10% of our gross income from work.
That's fantastic.
So that's a lot different than net, because this is gross before, you know, salaries or rent or anything. So it's a significant portion of the profits. But we have that from the Wealth Management Division, OptiVest Wealth Management. We have that from OptiVest Investment Banking. We've done Our principals there have done almost $4 billion worth of transactions there. And then OptiVest Properties. And okay. Properties is the division that we co-founded a public REIT and took it public on the New York Stock Exchange. That's a $4 billion REIT today. But on campus here, as you know, we've got these three divisions, and we have about 27 people. And the revenue from that last year, I'll just be transparent, was $8.2 million. So we were able to give away actually $827,000 to charities around the world
last year.
And that didn't just happen overnight.
No. Yeah,
I mean, we're in business 30 years now. But it's been neat to see, and we've got a number of stakeholders, including BART, that their revenue contributes to this. And there's about five of us that are all on board that otherwise this money would have gone in our pockets. But it is it's just something they're very passionate about.
That's a great cause, absolutely. I'm so proud to be part of such an amazing organization that gives back substantially.
We've got projects in about 12 countries.
Okay.
And so we do spend a lot of time in the third world. Our own project is the tip of Madagascar, and we've got a number in Africa, Haiti, Indonesia. I'll be back in Indonesia in June here visiting some early medical clinics and wells that we've done. So,
what's your favorite so far, your project?
You know, I think for a lot of us, the favorite is one of the first that kind of breaks your heart. And so we were down in Indonesia with our family, and indigenous people down there were just like Papua New Guinea. And we were able to, our money goes so far down there building medical clinics and such.
Right.
And I could spend an hour here telling you stories.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one quick one, though.
Yeah, please.
We built a medical clinic down there in Indonesia, and Warren and I, the head of the properties division, were able to be there when it opened. And it was on the edge of sort of the civilization, if you will. And people had walked a couple of days to come there. And the main thing that people have trouble with down there is malaria. There's four types of malaria. Either you could be just kind of like a cold or a bad flu. There's something that will knock you down for 6 months. And then there's cerebral, which kind of brain scrambles you. And then there's one that literally you die within a couple of days.
Wow.
So they can only tell by looking at a microscope. They had about 30 people in line that first morning. Opened the clinic. The first person in line was a pregnant gal.
Oh, my goodness.
She came in, and she actually had the deadly malaria. And she and her baby would have died within 2 days. And that was just the first person out of 30 people in line. And the clinic's been going about 10 years now. So
gives me chills. That's amazing.
That's kind of fun.
So we're running out of time here, but I wanted to be able to make sure that I ask you what your ultimate lesson learned is.
Sure. You told me this was coming, so I gave it some thought. And this is what I would say, is the secret to living is giving. The secret to living is giving. It's really true what Jesus said. It's better to give than receive. And I can go on with that, but I know we're short on time.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for being on the show today. I've learned so much, truly, and your time is valuable, and I really appreciate you sharing with everybody today. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting www.bartzandbergen.com. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer on the Zandbergen Report? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com.